This is Felvarin. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I think it's episode 683. I think that's where we are. I came across another person today who had no idea that I had a podcast, a coworker. And so we were looking an article up that I had done a podcast on. And he said, "What's this?" I said, "This is my podcast." He said, "I didn't know you had a podcast." I said, "Yeah." He said, "This is episode 683 today." And he laughed. So we scrolled down, scrolled. All 13 years maybe. 13 years. I think it is 13 years now. Anyways, so just don't know when to quit. That's my problem. It's been a good week at work. Got several things done that we needed to get done, and we're starting up a new, whole new project now. Where it is a project that tracks projects. So I think we're launching into that. We've got a few more little things to do. Of course, next week is going to be closing for the month, and that's always exciting because we have to do our harvest. And last month, we had a little hiccup. We timed out at one spot that we weren't supposed to time out at, but we were able to recover and go, so it was fine. And I've actually built myself a recovery tool now, but it's not deployed yet because we normally only do deploys once a month. So we are just going to trust that, if it times out again, we could just restart again, and then we'll get our new tool deployed. And if we turn into a problem, we'll just do an emergency deploy on the tool, and then ta-da! So it's fine. But there will be a little excitement next week. So aside from that, everything's puttering along with work, puttering along with book 17. That's going along good. I had mentioned that it was a little harder to get started on this one, and then when I did get started, I was trying to figure out what in the world. But actually, now that I'm in it, I'm like, oh, so that's what that was all about. And then not only is that what that's about, that opens up and hinges open something I've been needing to get back to. And so that was a little surprising. As I am fond of saying, I am the first beta reader. Because a lot of times when I am working on these books, I have no idea where we're going here, because I am just writing these as fast as I can, just stream of consciousness, running them out. It's very, very interesting. And it's really interesting to just watch it develop. So I'm pleased with how that's going. I think I just started chapter 7, which is about where I need to be. I'm a few words behind. It's really not bad. I think I'm under 200 words behind, but I wanted to work on costume last night, and so I knocked off at about 10 o'clock, 10:15 actually, so I could work on the costume for an hour or so before I hit the bed about 11:30. The costume is going fine. I'm in an assembly line mode now, so I did my proof of concept. Now I'm cranking out the first part of it. So that's all going fine. Won't get much done tonight on that, simply because it is small groups tonight. We won't have small groups for too much longer, though. I think we only go through May. So, it's really gone fast, but it's been very enjoyable. We've had a nice group of people, we've had a lot of good discussions, hopefully people have gotten encouraged a little bit. We've got one person who's joining us, who has been joining us now, And will be for the rest of the time. So that's good. She's normally is a counselor and does counseling, and I think she had just finished up teaching a class, a discipleship class at church. She has finished that up. And so she was just looking for some place to land for a few weeks, and we said, sure, come on. So, you know, we got her integrated into the group, and so she's going to be joining us for these last few weeks. And that's all going well. Really interesting group of people, good discussions. It's good. But I may have a little bit of time to write to kind of get caught up with that 100 or so, 200 words that I have left. I know what needs to be done there. And then, 2,000 words tomorrow, and then 2,500 words on Saturday, and we'll have another week down. So, 10,000 words a week through till June 1st. And then June 1st, the beta readers for book 16 should be finished up, so that'll come back in. Then I'll integrate that stuff, put out the production version, and then go from there. I think book 16 is fine. I've had several people tell me that they felt like it was a quick read and they enjoyed it, and so that's all good. Got a couple of new beta readers this time, so you do need to check in with them, see how they're doing. But all in all, I think we're good. Okay, so I came across this article, and I may have talked about this kind of thing before, but this really, to me, it's a fascinating topic. The name of the article is "The Mystery of Why Some People Become Sudden Geniuses." And this has happened multiple times. I don't think I would wish any of this on anybody, because you have to have a fairly dramatic experience, it seems like, to make this happen. So, for instance, in the summer of 1860, there was a man named Edward Muybridge, maybe, was running low on books. This was somewhat problematic since he was a bookseller. He handed off his San Francisco shop over to his brother, and he set off on a stagecoach to buy supplies. Little did he know, he was about to change his world forever. He was some way into his journey in the northeastern Texas when the coach ran into trouble. The driver cracked his whips and the horses broke into a run, leading the stagecoach surging down a steep mountain road. Eventually, it veered off into a tree. Muybridge was catapulted into the air and cracked his head on a boulder. This is a bad day. Came to 9 days later, he's in a hospital. The accident left him with lots of trouble. So, double vision, bouts of seizures, no sense of smell, hearing, or taste. But the most radical change was his personality. Previously, he'd been a genial and open man with good business sense. Afterwards, he was risk-taking, eccentric, and moody. And later, he murdered his wife's lover. And he was quite possibly a genius. So, you know, what is going on? Well, until recently, the article says, most sensible people agreed on one thing. Creativity begins in the pink, wobbly mass inside our skull. It surely goes without saying that striking the brain, impaling it, electrocuting it, shooting it, slicing bits out of it, or depriving it of oxygen would lead to a swift death and any great visions possessed by its owner. As it happens, the article says, sometimes the opposite is true. So after the accident, Muybridge eventually recovered enough to set sail to England. And that's where his creativity really took hold. He abandoned bookselling and became a photographer, one of the most prolific and famous in the world. He was also an inventor. I was just checking because my phone was just buzzing and I wanted to make sure it was just the cameras. I tentatively was going to pick my mother-in-law up and help her get her car back, but I think my wife already did that, so I don't have to do that. I wanted to make sure that I had not misunderstood, but we're okay. Anyways, became a photographer, one of the most famous in the world. He was also a prolific inventor. Before the accident, he hadn't filed a single patent. In the following two decades, he applied for at least 10. So, in 1877, he took a bet that allowed him to combine his invention and photography. Legend has it that his wealthy friend, a railroad tycoon called Leland Stanford, was convinced that horses could fly. Or more accurately, he was convinced that when they ran, all their legs leave the ground at the same time. Muybridge said they didn't. To prove it, he placed 12 cameras along a horse race track and installed a tripwire that would set them off automatically as Stanford's favorite racing horse, Occident, ran. Next, he invented an inelegantly named zoopraxoscope, a device which allowed him to project several images in quick succession to give the impression of motion. To his amazement, the horse was briefly suspended in mid-gallop. Muybridge had filmed the first movie, and with it proven that, yes, horses could fly. But he had to crack his head on a boulder to do it. And then there's Tony Sciorria, an orthopedic surgeon who was struck by lightning in New York Park in 1994. Went straight through his head, left him with an irresistible desire to play the piano. To begin with, he started playing other people's music, but he soon started writing down melodies that were constantly running through his head. Today, he's a pianist and composer, as well as a practicing surgeon. So he didn't seem like he ended up too bad. Another was John Sarkin, who was transformed from a chiropractor into an artist after a stroke. The urge to draw landed almost immediately. He was having all kinds of therapies at the hospital: speech therapy, art therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy. And he said, and then they stuck a crayon in my hand and said, want to draw? And I said, fine. So since then, his works have been published in the New York Times, featured on album covers, and been covered in a book by a prize-winning author. They regularly sell for $10,000. Well, so there you go. Most strikingly, there was Jason Paget, who was attacked at a bar in Tacoma, Washington in 2002. Before the attack, Paget was a college dropout who worked at a futon store. His primary passions in life were partying and chasing girls. He had no interest in maths. At school, he didn't even get into algebra class. But that night, everything changed. Initially, he was taken to the hospital with a severe concussion. Quote, I remember thinking everything looked funky, but I thought it was just the narcotics pain shot they gave me, he says. The next morning, I woke up and turned on the water. It looked like little tangent lines, a straight line that touches a single point of the curve, spiraling down. So, you know, all of a sudden he was seeing all this math stuff, and he said, I do feel like two people, and I've had my mom and dad say that. It's like having two separate kids. So, the article goes on to say, how does this happen, how does it work, and what does it teach us about what makes geniuses special? The article says there's two leading ideas. The first is that when you're bashed on the head, which is not a good day, when you're bashed on the head, the effects are similar to a dose of LSD. Psychedelic drugs are thought to enhance creativity by suppressing the levels of serotonin, the so-called happiness hormone, in the brain. This leads to synesthesia, in which one or more region is simultaneously activated and senses, which are usually separate, become linked. When the brain is injured, dead and dying cells leak serotonin into the surrounding tissues. Physically, this seems to encourage new connections between brain regions, just as with LSD. Mentally, it allows the person to link seemingly unconnected. Link the seemingly unconnected. Quote, "We've found permanent changes before. You can actually see connections in the brain that weren't there before," says Barrett Brogard. Let me get turned here. By the old Crystal Cave. And Crystal Cave is actually bought by someone else. And it's back open for business. And my wife and I need to go see there. Barrett Brogard, a neuroscientist who directs the Brogard Lab for Multisensory Research in Florida. So that's one thought, that when you get whacked in the head, the dying cells leak serotonin. It's similar to an LSD experience. Things are getting linked together that would normally be linked together, and then all of a sudden, kaboom. Okay, there's an alternative. The first clue emerged in 1998 when a group of neurologists noticed that five of their patients with dementia were also artists, remarkably good ones. Specifically, they had frontotemporal dementia, which means it's unusual that it only affects some parts of the brain. For example, visual creativity may be spared while language and social skills are progressively destroyed. So, patient five, they call it patient five. At age of 53, he had enrolled in a short course in drawing at the local parks, though he previously had no such interest in things. It just so happened to coincide with the onset of dementia. A few months later, he was having trouble speaking. Soon he became irritable and eccentric, developing a compulsion to search for money on the streets. As his illness progressed, so did his drawing, advancing from simple still life paintings to haunting, impressionist depictions of buildings of his childhood. To find out what was going on, scientists performed 3D scans of their patients' brains. In 4 out of 5 cases, they found lesions on the left hemisphere. So Nobel Prize-awarding research from the 1960s shows that the two halves of the brain specialize in different tasks. In general, the right side is home to creativity, and the left is the center of logic and language. But the left is also something of a bully. Quote, "It tends to be the dominant brain region," says Brogard. "It tends to suppress very marginal types of thinking, highly original, highly creative thinking, because it's beneficial for our decision-making abilities and our ability to function in life normally." So this theory is that as the patient's left hemispheres became progressively more damaged, their right hemispheres were free to flourish. So this is backed up by several other studies, including one in which creative insight in healthy volunteers was temporarily, in which creative insight was roused in healthy volunteers by temporarily dialing down activity in the left hemisphere and increasing it in the right. The lead researcher, Alan Snyder's work, was replicated by another person, so that's the theory I think that's responsible, said Daryl Turfert, a psychiatrist from the University of Wisconsin Medical School, who has been studying savants for decades. But what about mainstream geniuses? Could the theory explain their talents too? Consider autism. From Daniel Tammet, who can perform mind-boggling mathematical calculations at stupendous speeds, to Gottfried Mind, the cat Raphael, who drew the animal with an astonishing level of realism, so-called autistic savants can have human skills to rival those of the Renaissance polymaths. One theory suggests that autism arises from abnormally low levels of serotonin in the left hemisphere in childhood, which prevents the region from developing normally. Just like with sudden savant syndrome, this allows the right hemisphere to become more active. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Wow. We not only got one AARP magazine, we got two. So, interestingly, many people with sudden savant syndrome also develop symptoms of autism, including social problems, obsessive-compulsive behaviors, and all-consuming interest. It got so bad, quote, so Paget says, it got so bad that if I had money, I would spray the money with Lysol and put it in the microwave for a few seconds to get rid of the germs. Quote, they are usually able to have a normal life, but they also have this obsession, says Brogard. This is something universal across all savants. John Sarkin compares his art to an instinct. It doesn't feel like I'm drawing. It feels like I must draw. His studio contains thousands of finished and unfinished works, which are often scribbled with curves, words, cross-hatchings, and overlapping images. So, Turfert goes on to say, in my opinion at least, the fact that they can suddenly improve their ability doesn't negate the suddenness or insistence with which they are there. As our understanding of sudden savant syndrome improves, eventually it is hoped that we might be all able to unlock our hidden mental powers, perhaps with the help of smart drugs or hardware. I really hope that I am going to be gone by the time those are available, because that might be something I would actually try. So, although I am not at all unhappy with where I am mentally, and in fact, I enjoy very much where I am mentally, and I enjoy very much these weird connections that often occur to me that I ascribe to Jesus whispers. And I think they're Jesus whispers, but you know, who really knows? But I gotta say, I kind of like my brain the way it is, and I enjoy being with my little brain. And I think it would be very sad if something would happen. So I personally do not want any wax on the head or to get hit by lightning or to have any strokes or anything like that, because I think that would be a bad day. And everything is just lovely, just like it is. I was talking to a friend recently, and he's more in the middle of his life. And I was talking to him about the fact that when you're in the middle of your life and you have kids and you're trying to get them raised and you're watching over them, you know, there's just a lot of other things that can cause anxiety and stresses and all that kind of thing in your life. And I am just very content to be 63 and have my beautiful daughter grown up, living her own life with a lovely man, with two grandchildren who live next to us, and to be tailing down to the end of my work experience, coming up on 3 years and 3 months. It's just lovely. It's just lovely. So, you know, while it would be intriguing to have some of these abilities that these individual savants seem to have in terms of math and seeing all those things, you know, I'm just pretty pleased with things are the way they are now. And thank Jesus for that. And I do have small groups tonight, so I'm going to have to go inside. But you know what? I've made it home. And I'm really, really content with being where I am and being home. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.